welcome to the F1 Strategy Report for Apex Race Manager, the mobile management simulator. On this week's edition, the Russian Grand Prix, it's a maiden victory for F1's newest flying Finn, and his teammate said he would have been faster if he were faster. That's all to come in this edition of the Strategy Report. My name's Michael Laminato, and joining me this week from Crash.net is Josh Cruz. How are you doing?
Yeah, very good. Thank you for having me.
I wish we could have had a better race to have you on for. I always feel regret whenever this is the case, but, you know, nonetheless, we have to talk about it, I suppose.
Yeah, it's not the best display of Formula One, especially when they're trying to really push the fan engagement as well. So
even Vlad was there, as is now standard.
More than halfway through the race, he pops in, but he was always there to make that podium room very, very... very awkward indeed.
Two Finns time as well.
I know. I felt very sorry for Sebastian. But it's great that the hotels are full in Sochi, though.
But there was a race before that. In fact, I mean, we can't even not mention here that the race was won by a first-time race winner, which is one of the most important things with Formula One, I think, when we have new winners. And it was Valtteri Bottas. A very popular winner, I think.
Definitely. Very popular in the paddock, as you know as well. Such a lovely and nice person. I mean, it's not like no one's a nice person who's winning. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just to see someone break through and get his first win, he was just so elated as well, you know. Like, Sebastian went up and patted him in the back. He's like, this is your first one, isn't it? He's like, yep, really happy with this.
It took its time. How many... It was the same with this race win, same with his first pole a couple of weeks ago, where he had to tell people it was his first. Like, at the pole when they were on the video, it was just like... Well done, Valtteri. You got a pole. He's like, guys, it's my first one. It's the same this time. Like, is that your first race win?
Definitely, especially he hasn't won a race since September in 2011, where he won his last GP3 race in his title-winning year in Monza.
Which is a good stat and really goes to emphasise, I mean, he's been so very well hyped over this time in Formula One. Obviously not had the machinery, which I think Sebastian Vettel noted after there.
Yeah, definitely.
So finally delivering on that promise.
Yeah, and well, you're right. He was very well hyped because he even had a whole season off just to be the Williams test driver.
He went
from GP3 championship. Yeah, he won that. Mm-hmm. And then he went Williams test driver and then straight into this race seat.
Mm-hmm.
To partner Felipe Massa.
And it wasn't as easy as perhaps some people might have thought it would be, given he joined Mercedes, three-time world championship constructing team, so dominant over the last 3 years. He really had, even if it wasn't an outstanding drive, as we will get through, it was an extremely solid and consistent drive under the immense pressure of Sebastian Vettel, a four-time world championship driver.
Absolutely.
And we'll get into exactly how that was, because really it came down to, first of all, the start, as all good races, I guess, come down to in Formula One, because he only managed to qualify third. And it seemed as though during qualifying, given Mercedes' silver bullet, if you like, has always been that qualifying mode, not having them on the front row, it almost seemed like it was all lost from that point, but he managed to rescue it with that first lap.
Yeah, well, they had a really great start off the line, as did Sebastian. You can't take that away from him.
Absolutely, no. Similar starts, I thought.
Yeah, they both had very good starts, but Valtteri had the benefit of, you know, slipstreaming behind the Ferrari into that long, long, over a kilometre straight into the turn two, the notorious turn two that, you know, provides so much action over the past 3 years. So he was able to, you know, dispose of the Ferrari onto his left and then just dive into the corner and, you know, he was set. And he had the pace in that first stint to really, you know, put the hammer down and build that, what, four-second buffer he had?
Just thereabouts, which has been interesting because it was a complete reversal of roles in some respects. Because as much as we say that unusual this round, Mercedes wasn't able to lock out the front row, normally the opposite is then true in the race. Ferrari so far this season, very good race pace. We all remember Australia, similarly sort of straightforward affair, let's say, where Vettel was able to follow really closely Lewis Hamilton, whereas that wasn't the case here in Russia, where Vettel wasn't so easily able to follow, and that's largely down to Bottas's pace, but nonetheless, the race pace role seemed reversed.
It was a very, exactly right, it was reversed. And it was a very weird race watching as well. I mean, a lot of people didn't enjoy that race.
it's fair to
unfortunately,
say.
Unfortunately, But it was a race of numbers.
You know?
I mean, and that goes into another thing of, you know, how much data would be showing on the TV, but if you have the app next to you and you're watching, you know, and you're paying that $42 per season to watch these numbers go round after lap, you can see the lap times of the drivers, and, you know, so Mercedes were quite comfortable, or at least Bottas was in the first stint. You know, Hamilton was in his own world, falling behind Kimi Raikkonen. I think, you know, the pundits on the TV were saying, you know, he's in dirty air, that he's not the car's not coping. He was 1.5, 2 seconds, sometimes 3 seconds behind.
And eventually
Kimi.
Further. That's the thing.
And he was still having problems. So it wasn't the turbulent air that was hindering that Mercedes. It was something else. Like the chinks are definitely showing in the armor again.
Yeah.
Like, his last retirement was Malaysia last year.
When exactly.
That effectively cost him the championship.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, they're still been quite good. He went on to win every race after that, I think.
Yeah.
Now, his car's like overheating. He's frantically radioing the team saying, what's happening to my car? It's overheating. This is good, Lewis. Just try and keep it down. And they've got nothing else to say because I don't think they themselves know why the car is overheating.
Well, it's really interesting because now we're seeing these Mercedes niggles, and some of them I guess we could describe as phantom niggles. I know Lewis Hamilton on the radio was saying things like the power's cutting in and out. I think he said that in Australia as well. And when he was asked after, he said, no, there were no problems with the engine. So whether or not there were, I guess, remains in question. But these niggles, it seems, have actually been there for a while. I mean, we remember, some of the Russia last year, I guess, was a good example as well, where Hamilton had a water pressure problem, I think it was, and meant he couldn't challenge Nico Rosberg. And normally when Mercedes in the last 3 years have said, God, that race was so difficult when they dominated, and they'd say, we had all these problems. You go, whatever.
Yeah, it's
Mercedes.
So hard to get finished 1-2 again and
but
again.
But now that these niggles are happening when Ferrari's just there rather than 30 seconds down the road, they're actually starting to pay for them. So I wonder whether or not we've, and maybe even to a degree Mercedes, has taken the relative reliability for granted, and now that it's costing them, it's not so easy anymore.
Well, they've never been bulletproof anyway.
Every
season they have run into some sort of trouble, but it's just they've had that 20-second buffer over race where like no one's within an earshot of actually catching them and going for a win. But now that Ferrari have just taken a massive leapfrog over Red Bull and now are challenging and successfully challenging Mercedes, they've got no room for error. And when those errors do come, they've got nowhere to hide, and Ferrari capitalizing and not shooting themselves in the foot with poor strategy choices like they have in the past.
Yeah, and this race is a fine example. We will talk about Lewis Hamilton a little bit later, although how much more is there really to talk about a guy who finished 30-something seconds behind the leader? But this is a race traditionally Mercedes has dominated. In fact, they led every single lap in the history of the Russian Grand Prix at Sochi up until this year. In fact, they almost did it as well in this race,
Until Vettel came out of the pits and...
Yeah, for some pit stop changes there. But this really illustrates that strategy for Mercedes has become extremely important, as have those little reliability niggles, because there was this standoff in the first stint as to how the pit stops are going to fall, and Mercedes had to make a call that potentially could have cost them the race when they pitted Bottas more or less where they expected, lap 27, maybe a little bit later. But then Vettel and Ferrari were bold and took a gamble.
Well, I think it was a bit of game of chicken.
Yeah.
When are they going to pit? When are they going to pit? And I'll tell you what, like, there were only a couple drivers that started the race on alternative strategies. Mm-hmm. You had Van Dorn and the two Saubers of Wöhrlein and Ericsson, who started on the super softs, tried something different, didn't work. They pitted under the safety car under lap one, threw the ultra softs on, and they didn't even make them last. Like, even though,
unusually.
Even though Nico Hülkenberg could make them last, which I'm sure you'll touch on later. Mm-hmm. They lasted only a handful of laps, and then they pitted again for another set.
Mm-hmm.
So, there wasn't that many options for the strategy. And so I'm not sure where Mercedes could have gone. They probably should have tried something a bit earlier. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's only, I think, seven pit stops before the halfway point of the race.
Mm-hmm.
It's not exactly, not a ringing endorser for what F1 should be.
Mm-hmm. And on the strategy softest has to come in.
Yeah, exactly right. On the most degradable tyre we have.
Yeah.
That have been bumped up a step since last year.
Did 40 out of 52 laps in the hands of Nico Hülkenberg.
Exactly right. And probably could have kept going as well.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
I was watching his times quite closely. He wasn't that far off.
No.
His pace was good for the Renault, which is, doesn't have the best race pace, but consistently popping in higher 1 minute 30s.
Mm-hmm. And so, as we'll talk about in a moment with Sebastian Vettel, we'll talk about the track just briefly, because it is sort of a perfect storm combination for F1 in 2017. We've got these cars that are sort of naturally difficult to follow one another because there's so much aerodynamic emphasis. We've got Pirelli, who have made their tyres essentially one step harder this year. So this year's ultra soft is the super soft from last year, which is exactly the softest tyre they brought to last year.
Exactly. Yeah, and the choice the drivers had last year was the super softs, softs and the mediums. So with this new formula they've had, and they've bumped all the compounds higher, they haven't given the drivers an option to deviate from last year's strategy. What can we do different this year? Because they've essentially been handed the same sets of tyres.
Exactly. And combine that with A, not the most inspiring circuit in the world. Mostly 90-degree corners.
Oh, 90-degree corners, a couple of off-camber ones that shake the drivers up a bit, and a close semi-street circuit where visually unaesthetic, to be said.
Low snow
and lacking imagination
right.
as well.
Yes.
So even the prospect of having that as a night race doesn't really...
No.
Doesn't really...
No capturing
excite.
Of the imagination
no.
here, no. And on top of all of those things, those excellent combination of factors, a tarmac that is almost uniquely smooth on the calendar. I know we've got a couple of other smooth ones, but this one produces such minimal degradation that all of those factors combine.
That's the thing. I mean, a lot of tracks are resurfacing there. Mm-hmm. They're all, like, even the old great tracks like Hungary got resurfaced. And,
yeah, less character last year when it was
Silverstone's
done.
Been resurfaced.
Yeah.
And that's been changed in the past as well, as we know. Mm-hmm. And even China had that bump remove that challenged drivers. I mean, I didn't really mind that they removed it or not, but it was just that little element that got worse and worse every year.
Yeah.
And it caught people out. Mm-hmm. But they, we need to get rid of that because it's a bump and it's going to throw the drivers off and it's going to... It might make the racing more exciting. Oh.
It frustrates me that we have these smooth circuits, especially because it's not only just lack of degradation, but lack of grip. And in a year where grip is at a premium because it's so hard to follow each other already.
And teams like Red Bull are suffering as well because, Red Bull do struggle to warm their tyres up maybe more than other teams. So with a smoother surface and these harder compound tyres, they're just really not getting their tyres warmed on, as, say, Daniel Ricciardo suffered last round in Bahrain.
Exactly. So if we bring this back to Sebastian Vettel, obviously limited opportunities here to undercut or overcut those two famous strategy words in Formula One these days. Vettel did the so-called overcut where he stayed out 7 laps longer, but the crossover was so fine given there was so little degradation that it sort of made minimum difference in a sense of how much time he lost or won from the pit stop itself. But what it did give him was an opportunity to use slightly fresher tyres, 7 lap newer tyres against Bottas in that final stint. Now, he actually lost a bit of time in terms of the pit stop. He was only 2 and a bit seconds behind when Valtteri stopped, and he was 4.5 behind, or 4.6 behind when he eventually came out after his stop. But I guess the strategy more or less worked considering they finished less than a second.
It wasn't the smoothest of pit stops if you looked at it as well.
No.
He probably lost maybe a couple tenths with the front left, I think, took a bit going on. But other than that, it was still a decent stop. You can't blame anything on that. But they weren't really provided with, they didn't have many choices to go for. So when I saw people tweeting, he should be pitting now, he should be responding to Mercedes. I thought his times were exactly the same as Bottas's who had pitted. Why would you risk, we might not get these tires turned on for some reason, say it might be a couple degrees cooler. Why would we risk that when he's consistently putting in 1:38 or mid 1:38, whatever he was putting in? So I was happy that Ferrari took a bold move. I think it paid off. They may have being able to pit 1 or 2 laps earlier to give him that extra time to catch Bottas in the lead. But either way, even he's at the end, towards the end, I couldn't catch him, even if Massa held me up and I didn't like it.
Which is a wonderful, sneaky extra dimension to this race. The fact that, a former Bottas teammate, did he help Bottas get a win?
Bros for life.
I know, right? Toto says he owes him beers. I'm sure he'll take that, given it's his essential second retirement year. But I think what was interesting in that case was that yes, they bet on that tyre offset there, and we talk about whether or not they should have pitted that lap exactly. And it was really interesting to see the lap or two just before lap 34, which is when he ultimately stopped. Ferrari, they knew they were going to call him in. They called him in one lap, and then they decided not to have him in because, and this is sort of a little bit of a glimpse into how these kind of calls are made, they were monitoring how far back Kimi Raikkonen was and whether or not Vettel would put them in the unusual situation of having Vettel behind Raikkonen but still be the more aggressive driver.
Yeah, that was the problem they faced. I mean, the Ferrari was, clearly the faster car. It was faster than Mercedes on the super soft tyre. The ultra softs, I think Mercedes had the edge of them.
And Friday showed that as well. Yeah.
So I think they knew that as well. We could say hindsight's 20/20, but I think they had the problem of Raikkonen. They couldn't clear him. If they released Vettel behind Raikkonen after that pit stop race over.
Yeah.
So they needed to keep him out. That's why you saw those dummy pit stops.
They were waiting for Raikkonen to have a slightly dodgy lap to give Vettel the breathing space to pit.
Could be inevitable, some people could say.
To his credit,
he did keep up. He only just got in front of him as well.
Yeah.
But once he had that extra leeway, he had the clean air in front of him to put those tyres to good work, he quickly caught Bottas.
Yeah, and that's when those last 18 laps is when this race actually came alive. The gap didn't close quickly at first, but we talked about the pressure at the start of this show that Bottas was put under, and it did show viscerally at one point. Massive lockup, flat spotted his tyre.
Yeah,
his pace dropped off a couple of laps after that, and he managed to stabilise afterwards, but that was the moment where suddenly this was a race.
Vettel smells blood, he's going for it.
Yeah. I think even Ferrari's pit radio, when they're obviously notifying Vettel the whole time, they said, look, he's going to make a mistake. You should go for it. They were very sure.
Yep.
Which is...
they're just giving Vettel confidence to keep pushing because he's still a rookie in a big team.
Yeah.
I mean, not a rookie driver, but in a big team, he hasn't won a race yet, and that's the hardest one to win, your first one.
Absolutely.
So, Vettel was consistently catching him. He did a very good job of catching him. It was a couple of tenths per lap, and it was definitely going to be there. But... It sort of plateaued a bit once he got to the 1.4 seconds, 1.2 seconds. He could never break the DRS zone.
Mm-hmm.
So he had a big trouble to break that DRS zone and actually push for a challenge for the last few laps. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. Maybe there was a turbulent air. Maybe he's had it.
It was interesting to hear them in the green room, the cool down room just before the podium. They were talking about as they were going through the traffic. Yes. they were saying even 2 seconds, you could hear them talking about behind a car, they were losing downforce and losing grip because, of course, we talked about Felipe Massa. There were other backmarkers as well they had to pass in those last five or so laps. The effect of that losing grip following a car was severe in Sochi, which really made it difficult. Even had Vettel just had him and Bottas for the last five laps, whether or not he would have been close enough to launch a pass on a car that was more or less of a similar pace would have been a question.
Yeah, I mean, he would have needed another five or six laps at least.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he did catch him because of traffic, and that's part of racing.
Mm-hmm.
But in a straight line, the Mercedes still had it because you don't need your tyres for a straight line.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a decent engine.
Yeah.
Still probably one of the best.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two massive long straights on that Russian circuit.
Yeah, yeah.
So... to be able to get in the DRS zone and make it effective enough challenge to slipstream. He got it off the start, but that's a start. It's a different situation.
Yeah, of course.
So running into... I mean, I think when he did have DRS and they showed the graphic of how fast the cars were actually going, he was only matching his pace, where the DRS is meant to give you at least 10 kilometres of an advantage.
Yeah.
So it just shows that Mercedes still have a lot of power left in their, in their power unit. So I'm not convinced, and I'm sure Sebastian said as well, he's not convinced he was going to pass him anyway.
Mm-hmm. Very gracious of Vettel in any case, though, to at least give Bottas the moment, saying, look, he was the better driver of the day, and indeed he was, as I think we've covered now. That was
the world voted in the driver of the day as well.
Well, that means
Max
so
lost
much.
Out.
Yeah, a rare loss for Max Verstappen as well.
Yeah, he might have to recover in Barcelona.
Oh, yeah. No, I expect
top 10 finish, we'll see to that.
Even a retirement could see to it, let's be honest. If we look elsewhere down the grid for other... something to grasp onto in this race, some strategy. We did have Nico Hülkenberg, as we alluded to earlier, did 40 laps on the Ultrasoft, but even this was kind of, if you like, the same reason Vettel did. In the same way, Vettel lost one place off the start. Hülkenberg lost two in what was an unfortunate way to begin, was a pretty good qualification for Renault, and spent the whole race on this unusual 40-lap strategy to try and make that up. And it would have worked on any other circuit, I suppose.
Yeah, well, that Renault is quite good in race trim, I think, now. Like, I mean, it's not there yet, but they're scoring points now. I mean, you think there's some last year. One of them is, but I'm a bit more lenient on Jolyon than most other people. I mean, he's not doing himself any favours sometimes with the crash in Australia. And even in Sochi, that was a bit of a weird one where he took the curb too much. I mean, that's just a bit unfortunate and just a misjudgment.
Looks like a pressure error, I think. He's aware that there's a lot of pressure
on him now. He is, but he's still got the pace. You don't become a GB2 champion and fending off Stoffel van Dorn, who's highly rated in McLaren.
Absolutely.
And the F1 world as well.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see him off in a GB2 championship for nothing.
I mean,
arguably, van Dorn had the better team in GB2 with ART.
Mm-hmm.
So
took him another year to win it.
It did.
Yeah.
Well, he dominated. Okay,
yeah, he did
dominate. Fair respect
but,
to him.
Yeah, yeah. But getting back to Hülkenberg, Palmer aside.
Yeah, yeah. The Renault has taken a massive step, just like Ferrari has as well. And kudos to them for taking another strategy where they were very limited in strategy
in the
options this race. I mean, they could have followed the Force India or everyone else, for example, where they did the one stop after halfway of the race and seed it to the end, and maybe hopefully someone crashes out as another safety car.
Yeah.
But they chose to run the tyres to 40 laps.
Mm-hmm.
Hülkenberg's pace was very good on those 40 laps. He probably could have even gone
theoretically, a couple laps. Could have gone to the end of
he
the race.
He could have gone, yeah. But, obviously regulations prevent that.
Mm-hmm.
But, he although, you know, again, hindsight's 20/20, he could have pitted 3 or 4 laps earlier, and then he might have cashed Esteban Ocon, mm-hmm. because he finished, what, 2 seconds
behind him? He was really close pressing him for most of it.
Yeah, he was definitely pressuring the Force mm-hmm. India. So, you know, had he stopped a couple laps earlier, he might have challenged. But, you know, just kudos to them for trying something different in this, mm-hmm. you know, a bit of a snooze fest of a race.
Well, it was the kind of race where you had to do something different to have any advantage, because everyone does the same thing. Everyone finishes where they started, essentially, unless something weird does happen. Interesting, we talk about the development of the Renault car, and they have started putting more bits on the car, and of course Barcelona is a big race where everyone gets upgrades and so on and so forth. But the fact he could do, and yes, the circuit was weird, not a lot of degradation, but 40 laps nonetheless with such limited degradation does suggest that could be an emerging strength of the Renault in the future. We talk about cars that are light on their tyres. Ferrari is one we know this year, as they did a similar style of strategy, but maybe something to keep an eye on with Hülkenberg and Renault, that combination.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, Sauber did it in China as well. Marcus Ericsson ran, I think, over 40 laps as well in China. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't competitive pace, and the Sauber's not really challenging any team yet.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was speaking to him in China, and he was pretty proud of the fact that he managed 40-plus laps on a single, it might have been a soft compound tyre or whatever it was. But, I think, you know, teams are looking at it,
mm-hmm.
but it's just not the strategy of choice. I think it's just an alternative to a situation where what else can we do? We can't follow mm-hmm. the trend here and just finish behind another car because it's hard to overtake.
Mm-hmm. And we should talk briefly as well about the drivers, and we have mentioned them, that did try something different and couldn't pull it off. We always have to give them credit because they gave it a go, even if they're starting from the back, which enables them to do so. Van Dorn, Ericsson, Wöhrlein all started on the Supersoft, only drivers to do so, which really, really showed how standard the strategies were here, that no one else even dared to try. And they got exactly what they wanted. That crash between Palmer and Grosjean brought out the safety car within one lap of the Grand Prix, enabled them to switch and try and do essentially a zero-stop race.
Yep.
And they just couldn't do it. They all stopped before lap 24, which is earlier than even Bottas stopped.
I'm lost for words on that one because mm-hmm. something just didn't work, obviously. Mm-hmm. I mean, McLaren's an exception. I think they're just trying to see the end of the race. Then mm-hmm. they're honestly not fighting for points. But Sauber, like, they need to be trying different things.
Mm-hmm.
They have in the past, and it's worked. Like, they just need to be there when things go wrong in the top 10, which, you know, it did. In Brazil last year when mm-hmm. Felipe, you know, sold his own seat by getting the points in Brazil.
And I suppose as a final note to this race, we can give brief mention to the drivers that could have done more, whether their fault or otherwise. We've mentioned Hamilton, who simply said if he had better pace, he would have been further up. Yeah, Can't argue with that.
Yeah, I think a lot of the other drivers would say the same thing.
Which is, at least he's honest, I suppose.
Yeah, Fernando probably says the same thing every other week.
I think so. Yep. If he had a car to race, as is the situation here, a DNS, which is probably the worst kind of not participation you can get in Formula 1.
You tease with the formation lap and only pull over in the pit lane, don't even get to see the box.
You couldn't even get back into the box, which is tragic for him. One race to go to Lindy for him, though, I guess we can say. Yeah. New parts coming in Spain. Will they make a difference? Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, what parts are coming in Spain, though? Mm. Because he's convinced they have one of the best cars in the corner, probably the fastest car in the corner.
Yeah.
Where's the engine for that? Where's the power unit for that?
He's in career best form as well.
He is.
He's done, is it three best races in a row and the best ever qualifying he's ever done in Russia? So, you know, he's just
waiting. It's hard to judge ourselves, but he does it quite well.
Yep.
And he's confident in his abilities, just given the power unit.
Certainly very confident in his abilities. And briefly, Daniel Ricciardo, the second did not finish of four Grand Prix now for him.
Yep.
It's an interesting sign for Red Bull Racing because they're obviously pushing the envelope given their car's not where they want it to be. And this is two brake failures in a row after Verstappen lost his brakes in Bahrain, which is probably something that's going to be troubling them leading up to Spain.
Oh, I just hope they're not going to become the new Haas. That's such an interesting story of 2016.
Yeah, from Brembo to Carbon Industries and Brembo in one weekend.
In one weekend, you know, like even towards the end of last year, that was dominating the press conferences with Haas. You know, well, when are you going to run the new ones? Okay, we're going to test the new carbon industry in Brazil. Okay, you're going to use them? No, because it takes a long time to build them, you know? Yep. Okay, well, maybe next year.
Mm.
Great. I just hope Red Bull, you know, sort out their brake issues. I mean, it's not really characteristic of Red Bull to have, you know, two issues in a row, for example, and brakes. Yeah. You know,
an unusual issue to have.
It is. I mean, you can have overheating. You can have a Renault issue where they can point the finger at Renault like they're comfortable doing.
Do. Yeah.
but a brake issue is a curious one for Red Bull, I think.
So I'll leave you with a final question, though. We've talked about this race. The Spanish Grand Prix is next. We've talked about how Russia was predictably a bit slow. Spain is not always the best race either. And it's not just because of the track. It's usually because, well, they test here. They know this circuit so inside out. They've tested all the tyres here in the preseason. They theoretically know exactly what they're going to do around it. Do you feel like we could get a good race? A lot of upgrades coming.
Yeah, I think we have to pin our hopes on the upgrades, really. Yeah. We have to see what Mercedes can bring to, you know, tape up the issues on on their car. We need to see if Ferrari can capitalize, because a question that I asked of Ferrari, and I think many others did as well, was how they're going to continue their improvements and their updates without the guy who built the car.
Yeah, well, already on their third of four turbochargers, I know, weekend. So
the championship race could only last six rounds, and until they start getting penalties every three or four races. So we do have to pin our hopes on upgrades, because, like you said, it is a very well-known circuit to every driver.
Every driver, every team, everyone.
I mean, you think about last year's race was great because obviously the two Mercs took each other out.
Yeah.
But also, you have to remember that Vettel was faster than Verstappen and pushing him, but there was nowhere to pass on this track.
Yeah, it was a very tense difficult race, which was good.
It was tense.
But there was, you know...
And you don't need passing for good racing like we saw in Russia, because even though Vettel didn't pass Bottas, it still provided a great last few laps. But, you know, with Barcelona, I think you do need a couple of passes, because it can't be a procession from start to finish or a one-stop race.
Yeah, yeah. But you don't want that heading into Europe and then heading into Monaco, which inevitably is straightforward.
We've set ourselves up for Monaco. We know what we're getting ourselves into.
Yeah, exactly. Just get excited by the yachts, and that's all we
need. Get excited by the yachts, the celebrities you see on the grid.
Yep.
How great is that?
Yeah, and then all very thrilling.
And you see a couple of crashes, so you can guarantee that.
Yeah. So, well, we all look forward to Spain. It's a new upgrade. Let's just talk about the upgrades. Pretend we're McLaren, talk about the upgrades. I think that's the strategy from here on in.
Yeah, that's all you got to look forward to, isn't it?
Yeah,
in McLaren and Red Bull, to be honest. I mean, I think they're bringing almost a half or almost a new car.
Probably a whole new car. I'm surprised they haven't had to do a crash test on it, really. On that cheery note, I suppose, Josh, been a pleasure to have you on.
Thank
Sorry
you
for the poor race, but it's been good. And that was the strategy report for the 2017 Russian Grand Prix. But if you want to read more about the strategy from this week's race, you can go to f1strategyreport.com for the pit stop stats, tyre data, and a write-up from all the action in Sochi. The strategy report is powered by the 2017 edition of mobile game Apex Race Manager, the number one new racing game in Germany, Italy, and Australia. You can go and get yourself a free copy of Apex Race Manager from the iTunes and Google Play stores. My name's Michael Laminato. You can find me at Michael Laminato on Twitter, and I'll catch you in 2 weeks' time for the Spanish Grand Prix.